Hello and welcome to the Open Systems Media eCast Device Management, the key to unlocking IoT success. I'm Kurt Schwader, your moderator, with today's speaker, Graham Morphew from Wind River. Graham is a senior director of product management for Wind River. He's focused on Wind River's Helix Device Cloud, which is device management platform for the Internet of Things. Graham joined Wind River in 2008, working on operating systems, software development tools, networking platforms, graphics, and simulation technologies. Graham has over 20 years of experience in the software and tools industry. Prior to joining Wind River, Graham held product management and field applications engineering positions with ARC International and Precise Software Technologies, where he successfully brought to market real-time operating systems products and development tools. Today's schedule consists of about 40 minutes of presentation, leaving 20 minutes at the end of the hour for audience Q&A. Before we begin, I want to run down some important features of your viewing console. It consists of a set of windows that you can close, open, move, resize to your personal preference. On entry, you'll see a picture of our presenter. In the presenter's window, his biography, presentation slides in the slides window, and a Q&A window, which enables you to ask questions during the event. Now, there are seven icons across the bottom of your screen. Clicking on the icon on the far left will reset your viewing area in case you've accidentally closed something you want reopened. The rest of the icons will open or close their corresponding window. You can hover your mouse around each of those windows to show what it controls. The handout icon, third from the right, I'll point out, opens a handout window that has the presenter's slides in PDF format so you can follow along with or download those for future reference. Now, the Q&A window I talked about enables you to participate in today's event. You can simply type your question into the Ask a Question text box and then hit Submit. We encourage you to ask questions throughout the event. While the question is fresh in your mind, we'll address as many of these as we can during the closing Q&A. And if you have a question pertaining to the eCast operation itself, you can submit those too, and one of our technicians will be happy to help you. This and all Open Systems Media eCasts are copyrighted and may not be recorded or used in any way without the express written consent of Open Systems Media. Graham, welcome, and the floor is yours.
Thanks, Kurt. Today I'm here to talk about, of course, the Internet of Things and device management, and specifically why device management is key to being successful with an IoT deployment. It's going to be a fairly high-level presentation. There's a lot of detail to go into with IoT. It's a very complex subject, but I hope it'll give you an introduction as to why at Wind River we're focused on the device management aspects of IoT. If you're listening to this webinar, you're viewing online, I'm guessing you're probably familiar with the concept of IoT, so I'm not going to go too much into that. But it's been very hard to escape the hype. And while this slide you see here could probably be used easily as a free eyesight test, it's actually a recently released Gartner hype curve to give you an idea of sort of some indication of where the market is and what some of the leading analysts see in the IoT market. And as you can see circled in red, the subject of IoT is really approaching what they call the peak of inflated expectations, and this is really sort of that hype concept. And all this hype has, of course, triggered a lot of investments from companies, you know, billions of dollars being invested in IoT, somewhat ahead of the market. But based on market forecasts for billions of IoT devices generating values that some reports have in the trillions and trillions of dollars. So there's also very strong relief that this is the real deal, that a lot of the promise of this hype will be realized in real profits for companies. And as Gartner calls it, this sort of plateau of productivity that you see to the right is going to be reached, where the investments that companies are making in IoT technologies can become very lucrative to them. But the reality is that others are going to get stuck in what Gartner calls this trough of disillusionment, where they bought into the hype, but they don't really realize the benefits that they thought they were going to get. So it's really important to have a comprehensive plan for IoT investment versus sort of blindly jumping in headfirst and starting to connect a whole bunch of things to the Internet and feeling that magically you'll be successful. But there's a lot of money being poured into IoT investments today, and that's probably why you're all here. So IoT is first and foremost, as the name implied, about connecting things to the Internet. So why do we want to connect all these devices in the first place? Well, the answer you'll hear the most is that it's really all about the data and this data that you can extract from all of these devices. But really impacts the value of IoT is what you can do with that data. And this varies, between use cases. And usually it's that data that's useful, but it's useful for one of two main reasons. It can help reduce operating expenses, or it can help you generate new revenue streams. So when you're talking about what's driving the IoT market, it's not so much the technologies and features that customers really buy into. It's really about making or saving money. It seems logical enough, right? People want to spend money to get something back. So if you're interested in making money from IoT, then usually you're looking at creating new business models, or driving new revenue streams by monetizing the value of the data that you're pulling off these IoT devices. Maybe you're actually selling large amounts of data to a third party that, you know, maybe this data is useful to others and that they have a value associated with that. You may be offering new services to customers or potentially new ways to sell to customers through new business models that are enabled by this connection to remote devices. This can create higher customer satisfaction when you're offering new services and business models, and also help you ensure customer retention, especially if you're in a competitive situation and you want to avoid commoditization. Right? These companies are looking towards IoT as a way to differentiate, and in some markets, just keep pace with their competitors. If you want to save money through IoT, then it often means you're leveraging information from your fielded devices that enables you to do something like predictive maintenance or field diagnostics. The most common thing we hear from customers is that they want to use IoT, especially in industrial types of applications, to do something that they call preventing truck rolls, right? And this is really the cost of sending a live technician on site to a remote device to work on it or replace it. And by reducing the number of truck rolls for a large company's service organization, this can represent a huge cost savings for a company and really impact their bottom line. So here is an example, and I have a number of examples that we'll talk about throughout the presentation. This one's an example of a manufacturer of industrial welders. And they maintain service level agreements with their customers, and they're actually penalized if their equipment is not available when their customer needs to use it. It's kind of a leasing type of situation, I believe. And to add to their complexity of their business, they have aftermarket consumable parts, and poor maintenance reporting can sometimes degrade the performance of their equipment over time. And they've had challenges in terms of monitoring performance of their equipment on a customer site until it's kind of too late and there's an emergency and they have to do something immediately. So they saw the Internet of Things as a way to improve this service level performance, allowing them to avoid these types of penalties by getting information about their equipment while it's in the field. So actually, they started from a perspective of saving costs. However, they soon realized it would enable them to create new types of business opportunities, new types of revenue streams. And by understanding the usage and operating conditions, they were able to upsell consumable parts. And so in addition to getting a better line of sight into operations of their equipment, and this enabled them to provide even higher levels of service and different business models that they can monetize. And one of the examples that we saw of a slightly different business model, instead of sort of a standard lease of, okay, you can have it this equipment for a year and there's a cost associated with that, they can actually do things like charge per weld, right, which you couldn't do before, and it represented a different way for customers to consume the product that they're providing. So this transition from starting with an operational optimization and transitioning into new revenue sources is actually can be a common path as companies sort of start out with a very simple use case for IoT, and then they can, you know, they learn to better understand what the type of information they can get from their devices and reap more benefits as they kind of expand their use. Another example of a company that Wind River is working with is one that manufactures ticketing and turnstile machines used in the transportation industry, things like public rail systems. They manufacture various types of devices, things like kiosks to get ticketing, and they use a number of different operating systems depending on the version and the specific deployment. And they have a large number of brownfield devices, you know, these legacy devices that weren't originally built as Internet-enabled or IoT devices. And for their business, any downtime they have represents a loss of business and affects the end user satisfaction. And they, too, have these service-level agreements that must be met with their customers that are usually things like cities or large transportation companies. And if they don't meet these service level agreements, these SLAs, again, they can incur financial penalties. So devices really have to be for them operational at all times. They need also a common platform, and why they're talking to us, to be able to manage this level of complexity, monitor the health of their devices in the field, and they want to, again, avoid this concept of having to send people to check on them in person, right? It's much more cost efficient for them to monitor the devices remotely, you know, make some changes potentially to the system, than sending people out to inspect them and install new capabilities, things like this. So in doing all this, they believe they're going to be better able to honor their service level agreements in an efficient manner, and avoid these kind of costly fines and penalties that they can incur if they're not living up to them. And this is really a pretty clear example of how you can leverage IoT to gain operational efficiencies that translate to the bottom line. We can use the Internet of Things to make money or to save money for all types of different businesses. So it sounds easy enough, but, of course, it's not that easy. There's plenty of challenges, and I'll get into some of those in the next section here. So here are some of the pitfalls that you should really make sure you avoid, and some of these aren't always ones that come top of mind when you get started. Getting device data is great, but if you can't change anything on the device based on this data, it's really quite limiting. You can tell maybe if something's failing or going wrong, but you still need to potentially send someone out there to the device to do something about it. So you should also consider the cost of doing things like upgrading the software on fielded devices, especially on headless devices in very remote locations or places that are just generally hard to reach, like somewhere on a factory floor that's just not easily accessible for a human, for example. And if you need to update a deployed device's software because while they may seem bulletproof when you initially deploy them, things can change in the field, obviously, and you may need new functionality. It may be expected that from your customer that you'll be upgrading your devices, or potentially the operating conditions change and you need to reset the parameters that the device you have is operating under. So ultimately, you need to plan for the long term. Also, you know, initially when you deploy systems, they may behave very well during a proof of concept, but when you start to really expand the volume and the number of these devices, the complexity of these systems can grow very quickly and sometimes exponentially. And you can start to discover new problems that you didn't anticipate or see when you had a smaller volume system, right? And you may start to deploy devices to different geographies and things like this. So a small system and a large system can have a lot of differences in terms of how the system behaves. If you value the data that comes off these devices, right, you want to get the benefit of all that data and be able to monetize it somehow, you want to make sure that these devices continue to be operational. And to do that, then you'll need to have a way to manage these deployed devices. So device management is really a key ingredient for ongoing success in IoT. So there's more about IoT than just getting data from your device. When building an IoT-enabled device, you have to think of the entire life cycle of that device. Here's a representation of how we look at the IoT device life cycle at Wind River. We have this life cycle that has six phases, and it all starts with deployment, where you have a device in the field, and you want to provision, authenticate, configure, and ultimately connect that device over the Internet to some type of cloud platform. To cover a little bit more about what each of these terms means, and sometimes they overlap with each other, provisioning really refers to the process of generating and storing a certificate on the device, and that certificate's then used to securely connect to a cloud platform. You don't want any rogue devices connecting to your cloud and pretending they're something that you don't think they are. And that brings us to authentication. So authentication leverages a certificate capability, but expands that by really going through a process of authenticating that the device that is connecting is really the device that you think it is. And configuration is referring to the fact that once a device has connected to the platform, you may want to send it additional configuration data that impacts its specific operational nature. So if you have some devices that you want to behave slightly differently on one customer site than another, then knowing that that particular device has been sold to Company X, you can send configuration data to that device that's specific to each deployment. So next in the life cycle, we have monitoring. And this is about sending telemetry data, so really starting to get into the data extraction from the device that describes the status of the device in some way. And for device management, the data that's important to you really is the data that will give you some information about the device that will affect how you want to interact with that device. If something needs to be done through the management capabilities, that's the type of data that you really want to pass through the device management system. And this data can be almost anything. It really depends on the application. But most of all and most commonly, the things you want to know is whether the device is healthy and operating as expected. This data can also be used to drive the creation and management of alerts. And these alerts can be used to inform the system that there's a problem with the device or trigger some type of maintenance activity or simply alert a support person or someone who's monitoring the system that there's a problem with a specific device in the system. So really, the idea here, this is where things like preventative maintenance comes into play, like the welder example that I gave you, where it really helps you be aware of a potential problem before it becomes an actual failure in the field. So moving on to the service component. With service, it's really about having diagnostic tools that you can leverage from a device management system console that connect into the device and give you a deep dive into certain information about that device. So this can mean anything from remote login access to the device to retrieving log files from the device to performing some kind of root cause analysis and any type of troubleshooting. And troubleshooting can be done by way of sending files from that device, like the log files that I mentioned, or sending new files to the device that modify or repair behaviors of some of the programs that are running on the device. Or it could be sending new configuration data to the device and having it behave in a slightly different way. You know, for example, if you need to slow down a device that may have some kind of spinning action because it's starting to wobble, for example, and putting it in a safer mode of operation until such time that you can get a service technician there to do something physical with the device. You may want to also provide remote access, as I mentioned before, that really allows you to sort of deep dive into problems or make fine-grained changes to the device while it's in the field. This is where it's in the service component that you're really going to make that decision about whether or not to cause that truck roll out to the device or not. So the more tools that you can build for your specific device to help in that decision, the better off you're going to be, the better decisions you're going to make, and hopefully the more efficient you're going to be from a cost perspective as an organization. Moving on to the manage component, a big part of IoT device management is being able to control those devices remotely and to make them do something. And all devices have properties that you may want to inspect remotely, such as what devices you have deployed, who owns the device, where it's located, or what version of a set of software is installed. So this is different from telemetry and monitoring in that the telemetry is streaming off the device in some way. With managing from a properties perspective, think of it as going in and looking at more or less static data that's on the device so you can understand how that device is set up, for example. You may also want to take actions on the device itself, and an action is anything that would change the setting or operational parameters of the device. It's usually a simple application, essentially, that you can invoke from your device management console, this cloud platform that you're using to manage the devices. And it could be something as simple as running a detailed diagnostic or even rebooting the device, if that's the course of action that you want to take. You also may want to review changes in the device, make sure it's current, make sure it has the latest software, track any kind of changes to the device, and just understand potentially how that impacts its performance, as well as understanding where things are in terms of physical components that might be wearing out, or just generally what the history of the device is. So and service, to some extent, as you can probably tell, overlap a little bit, but we see them as somewhat distinct actions depending on the type of information you're looking at. At some point in the device life cycle, there's inevitably a need to update the software, as I mentioned earlier. And this is something that we get asked about a lot. This is maybe in terms of our history with Wind River, and working with embedded devices, this is certainly a specific challenge for a lot of the companies we've traditionally worked with. But this is probably the most common feature we get asked about first is, this concept of wanting to adopt IoT so that they can update their devices software remotely. It can range from wanting to update an application or a single application, or maybe there's a new application that you want to install on the device. It could be something a little bit more risky, like doing an operating system update or a firmware update, right, where you're really getting down into the low-level functionality of the device. Or it could be something like a security patch. Either way, in any of these circumstances, there needs to be a mechanism to send these software updates and install them. Otherwise, what you see a lot of today is that you have technicians rolling around in trucks again, going out physically in person to the device with a USB key and installing the software update manually. Right? This is a very common thing. As you can imagine, that's a pretty expensive endeavor. And one key danger of that you run into with remote updates, of course, and this can happen, of course, with someone there on site physically, is you have the risk that the update fails in some way. And worse still, if you have a failed update, the worst case scenario you can run into is that the update causes some kind of overall failure in the device, rendering it essentially useless, which commonly would be known as bricking the device. You really want to avoid that. So the ability to be able to recover from a software installation error and potentially have mechanisms to roll back to a previously known good configuration is really, really a helpful capability that you can have. But it's a complex process, as you can imagine, and we see this much more when you're dealing with devices that have more robust operating systems like Linux, where you can have these types of capabilities sort of built into the OS itself. If you don't have them built into the OS, then typically you're probably looking at doing some very specific things that that can manage these types of situations for your particular device. But generally, one of the big concerns for customers in the software update area is that they want to have this robustness in the system to be able to update software remotely and do it in a safe way. And last but not least, though relatively simple in some respects compared to some of these other phases in the life cycle, is decommissioning. So inevitably, at some point, you'll have devices that you want to take out of active duty. And that means you have to, in some way, terminate the life of that device, or maybe you found that that device has been compromised, stolen, or there's some other reason that you want to remove it from operation. So you need mechanisms to essentially remove or deactivate that device so that it can't reconnect to your system. You want to potentially wipe data off that device and trigger a type of data purging so that all that data is protected and it can essentially be remotely deleted to allow you to take that device out of service and allow you to potentially install new ones and just essentially take it offline. Okay, so that was a quick run through our, sort of our concept of the life cycle. But there's a lot more to discuss in terms of things to consider when designing an IoT device. Things like the software footprint size and what all these management capabilities might do to that. Things like IT network restrictions, right? So if you're going to put a device behind a corporate firewall, you need to make sure that you can connect through that firewall. Things like data privacy concerns, how much of that data that you're pulling off the device is considered private potentially to someone. And, of course, this looming issue that you heard in a couple of my examples about service levels agreements with your end customers. So on this slide, you can see a lot of different concerns. I've touched on a few. But in general, these things can be grouped into three categories: complexity, regulation, and security. So I'll touch on each one of those sections in a little bit more detail in a second. So we'll start with complexity. So connectivity, of course, the concept is not new, but connecting large number of IoT devices to a cloud platform really represents a whole new challenge, because now your devices are part of a much larger system. You know, size, different OSs, different types of devices, how you're going to access through multiple networks. These are very complex systems we're now talking about, because the diversity that we have with IoT devices, things that are embedded devices in nature in many respects, there's a lot more variety than what you would see in sort of a network of managed PCs in a corporate setting, for example. So let's look at a couple, at least one example of the type of complexity challenges that companies are facing. So in a factory automation setting, there's often many different OSs that are in play on devices that need to be managed. And typically, many of these devices are all being managed by one company across multiple product lines. And in some cases, you have products that are customized for each individual end customer that they have or end factory floor setup. So there's a lot of diversity and complexity in what and some of these industrial companies have deployed. And in order to maintain profit margins for these companies, they really look at being able to manage these systems efficiently. It's a high cost for them, a high cost for their customer, and so they're really looking at ways to optimize their operations. A lot of devices in these types of settings in industry and factory automation, they can be in very hard to reach areas. They can be in dangerous areas. So servicing is very difficult and typically expensive. Experts have to be sent on site. They may need special equipment. So when a device fails, it's very beneficial if you can do as much as you can remotely through a management platform. And device failures in these types of environments can be really costly, especially if you have a device fail in an assembly line and it brings the whole assembly line to a halt. So here again, you hear about SLAs from companies like these, and they're hugely important to them. So all these things add up to a lot of complexity for factory automation companies, and there's really a lot of benefits for them to gain from leveraging IoT and having a good device management strategy. So IoT raises many regulatory and legal questions and concerns. As IoT technology is quickly changing, it's difficult to keep all the associated policies, legal and regulatory structures in sync. And so you see governments and other regulators have started to really focus on IoT and what it means for them and for the safety and the best interest of the people that they're in place to protect, the citizens of a country or a city or whatever. And so they're really starting to dig in on what IoT potentially means for them. So I have a couple of examples here, again, of companies that we're talking to. In this example of how regulation impacts, in this case, a smart lighting use case, sometimes regulation is actually the catalyst for an IoT solution. Regulation on things like carbon emissions or energy consumptions is a simple example. In order to monitor and report conditions in an industrial or commercial facility, IoT solutions are being deployed and they're deploying them to ensure accuracy and compliance with these types of regulations. So smart city and smart building initiatives are kind of key components in managing energy consumption and environmental conditions. And so we're talking to a company that's doing just that, you know, deploying these smart lighting solutions in buildings and factories that really account for usage of the lighting system and seek to optimize the energy use in facilities with the promise of really reducing the overall energy spend. Another example, a biomedical company, they have a very different regulatory challenge. This customer manufactures devices that measure, in this case, blood glucose levels. And managing devices that have certified software, something that Wind River obviously has a history in, is very common in the medical sector and requires additional thought and planning in terms of what kind of capabilities you want to try and leverage and how you're going to do it. In addition to certification, they also need to address the challenges of patient data and the privacy issues concerned with that, which kind of leads into the next topic, which is security. So the security, just waiting for the slide to come up here. The security discussion around IoT is often a fairly heated one. Right? There's a lot of discussion on this topic, and many experts agree that IoT has potential to be a significant security challenge. So talk about a few examples here. So one example that the general population is probably familiar with is I think last year in 2015, there were some cybersecurity researchers, and they made headlines when they successfully took over controls of a Jeep Cherokee on a highway driving along by hacking into the car's infotainment system. And the news generated a lot of widespread alarm, of course. But this followed almost daily reports of cyber threats to things like critical infrastructures, banks, government agencies. But it was this takeover of a private automobile while it was driving on the road that had a far more unnerving effect on the average citizens who many of who drive every day. So by all accounts, this hack was ethical, and the people involved notified the car maker and everyone who participated in the test was all part of the plan. It proved how easily someone with malicious intent could potentially harm innocent people. And the incident helped really bring to light this concept of the Internet thing into the general public consciousness. And it was also a wake-up call concerning the urgent need for security around IoT applications, or more precisely, a comprehensive and holistic approach to security over the entire IoT system lifecycle. But it was not the first time the world saw examples of security problems like this. For a long time, people believed in security by obscurity for embedded devices, that embedded devices, by their very nature of being unique in their variety, really wouldn't become targets for cyber attacks. However, as the example showed before, this view has now been proven to be completely invalid. Just like last week, actually, there was a significant denial of service attack on an important DNS service, and that result of that knocked out some of some well-known websites. And the belief was that compromised IoT devices were actually used as part of that attack. But to go back a little further in history, maybe the most famous attack on embedded devices is one that you're probably more familiar with, was one called Stuxnet. And Stuxnet was really a virus that was specifically targeted at programmable logic controllers, PLCs, which in this case allowed the automation of fast-spinning centrifuges, a process that was used in the enrichment of uranium, which, of course, is another sort of unnerving area where a security threat is quite concerning. lot of challenges, and certainly, especially in areas like security, you could really dive in much, much more deeply, and that could be a whole webinar, of course, or a series of webinars unto itself. But, you know, in covering all these challenges, these are things that really above and beyond the relatively simple of just getting data from your device. And if we're able to address all these obstacles and understand them and have a plan for them, then you really give yourself the best odds to take advantage of the opportunities that IoT promises. So we talked about IoT and how it's so much more than just getting device data. We've looked at some of the many challenges that companies can face when rolling out IoT devices and why device management is so important. So so where does Wind River fit in all this? We recognize that in the IoT market, you know, our strength comes from our history. Our company has been best known for working closely with the device while supporting connectivity, security, and safety, with this really as our core strength. We're adding new capabilities to help customers as well in terms of managing those millions of devices or thousands of devices from the cloud, right? So we're really investing in a lot of new cloud technologies. So at Wind River, what we've done is we've created a product called the Helix Device Cloud, which is focused on these device management aspects of IoT, something that we feel at times in the rush to deploying IoT devices becomes a bit overlooked. And Helix Device Cloud is really designed to help IoT developers and the companies that deploy these devices to provide the necessary remote management capabilities for devices that are out in the field, and doing this through a cloud-based environment. This cloud platform can be used with a web-based management console that we provide with a UI that allows you to take actions on devices and monitor their status. But all these capabilities can be leveraged through a set of REST APIs. And these REST APIs can be used to integrate potentially with a customer's enterprise IT system or other cloud platforms. And Helix Device Cloud has the ability to capture and act on telemetry data coming from the device or forward that data potentially to another cloud service if you have a service set up to do some types of analytics processing, for example. And the system allows you to take any types of actions that you want to program into the device, gain understanding into a device's operation, and deliver software updates. And it can do all of this securely so that your devices can remain protected. So this is a functional view of the Helix Device Cloud that shows the various capabilities that are provided by the main components. There's very much an agent component, which is the part that runs on the embedded device. As well as this management platform, which runs up in the cloud. And in addition to being able to do things like send telemetry data and deliver software updates, you can do things like send and receive files to the device, to generate alerts from the device when to inform people who are monitoring the system that something's happening. Or you can also establish rules so that when certain conditions are met, you can actually allow the system to take actions automatically. And if you're interested in a bit more detail about the capabilities of a Helix Device Cloud, there's lots of information on the Wind River website, or you can get in touch in other ways with Wind River. Now, we're a fairly decent-sized company, but as we've discussed, the world of IoT is a complex one, and there's no way to really address everything on your own. So enabling an ecosystem and leveraging technology from multiple sources is crucial. It's crucial for us as a provider, and it's crucial for you as a consumer potentially and a builder of an end-to-end IoT system. So So we're working with a number of other companies in the IoT space and some of the big cloud vendors to help pull together a number of different solutions. And so you've probably seen press releases and announcements of some of the things that we're doing with those other companies. To wrap up, the business case for the Internet of Things is often driven by the value of data that's being generated by these hundreds or thousands or potentially millions of fielded devices. These types of devices are often located far away in remote locations, or they may not be very accessible. But the health of these devices directly impacts the entire system and ultimately impacts the profitability of your organization. So as device manufacturers and IoT system developers evaluate IoT platforms, they need to consider more than just capturing and analyzing data. A well-defined device management strategy is a vital aspect, really, of IoT product success. So I hope you found this information in the presentation today informative. If you want to learn more about Wind River and our IoT products and services, please get in touch with us. So now I'll turn it back over to Kurt, and we'll see if we have some questions from the audience.
Great. Thanks a lot, Graham. Really appreciate it. We do have some questions coming in. I want to remind the audience you can continue to ask questions during the Q&A as well. Let's see here. Let's start with this one. How can you create and manage automated behaviors of an IoT device?
So what you need to do, I can talk about it from the perspective of Helix Device Cloud. That's the easiest for me. Mm-hmm. In Helix Device Cloud, what you would do is you would create a rule. A rule is something that you program into the device management system that monitors telemetry data, for example, as I talked about, from the devices. And when a particular condition is met using, and you can define the condition as, you can think of it as kind of a logical expression, then a specific action can be taken. And the action is something that you essentially program into the rule. It could be something like creating an alert in the management system, sending an email to someone, or it could trigger an action on the device specifically, such as dump a set of log files or change the speed of a fan, for example, or any number of things. Anything that you want to program in the device, you can have a rule and invoke that action. So once the rule's in place and enabled, then the behavior is essentially completely automatic at that point.
Okay, great. Yeah, I think we're getting quite a few questions about that are related. I'm going to start with this one, and we can maybe move through the rest of them as they seem to go down the chain. So you talked early on about proactive maintenance, and that's an interesting application. How does Helix Device Cloud environment operate end-to-end by monitoring possible out-of-tolerance or intermittent issues with the sensors? Are there things you can program into the cloud to kind of detect out-of-tolerance things and alarm or something?
Yeah, I mean, it sort of goes back to the previous question where on the device side, you decide what data you want to send up into the management system, right? So if you're monitoring data and looking for tolerances, you can set up a rule that says if the tolerance exceeds this level, then take some sort of action, right? So it's very in line with the previous question. So an example would be if you want to monitor temperature on a device, and we have a few demos that kind of show this type of situation, whereas if you exceed a certain high temperature threshold, then that would trigger a rule, and that would allow you to then potentially invoke some type of cooling capability in another device, potentially nearby, to cool the overall system, for example.
Right. Okay. Interconnected control of these IoT embedded devices. Yeah. This dovetails into this question. Does device management play a role in the analytics feedback loop? So I guess, you know, in terms of what's coming back, the value of IoT might be business intelligence, might be the way users are using devices, but then these things that we've been talking about, all out of tolerance, temperature, that kind of stuff, also feeds back into this big glom of information as well, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, you can certainly, and this is why we look at the world as potentially not trying to provide everything. If you have a well-established analytics engine, you know, there's a lot of big companies that provide those. Then you can send data to that analytics engine and get information back from it, and then in the device management system, you could then take action based on what the analytics are telling you. With Helix Device Cloud, we consciously made a decision that we didn't want to have analytics necessarily as part of that package. We think there's companies that probably have very robust solutions for that already. And the beauty of doing, you know, having these cloud integrations is you can leverage sort of best practices from other vendors and then have those two systems communicate amongst each other.
All right. Yeah, and there are questions about standards for IoT device management, APIs, those kinds of things.
So for standards, there's a number of organizations that they're forming in the IoT market, but I don't, as of yet, and we get this question quite a lot from companies asking, is there a standard? But I think overall it's pretty early days for these technologies. One area that where I think standards could come into play is potentially around a standard set of REST API calls for device management. That different device management vendors could support and adopt, and that might make the types of integrations I talked about in the last question easier across multiple vendors, if you like.
But
as I said, I haven't seen anything like that really emerging at this point in terms of something that's starting to be widely adopted. But I think we're still in the early days of this. But I would expect, you know, those types of standards to start to emerge before too long.
Right, yeah. Rollout. You talked about rollout during the presentation, and scaling is a huge factor here. What kinds of considerations are there when you're scaling? Is it like the number of sensors you're deploying scales, geographical reach scales, the number of users using the IoT? How does the Helix device management piece help when you're scaling?
Yeah, I mean, and this is where this question is really interesting when you we're out and talking to companies that are kind of thinking about this almost in a roll-your-own format. And they think, oh, well, you know, we can do this ourselves. You know, and embedded engineers are classically trained to think that they can solve any problem. The advantage of going with our story is more of a commercial vendor is like we're scaling across multiple customers. You know, we have the ability to scale very, very widely with what we have. And we caution, some of the companies that we talk to about, sort of going it alone and diving into it too quickly and kind of hitting a dead end for too long. But but scaling is an interesting topic. But you really have to sort of look at the overall system in terms of how much how much data you're going to be generating, how many devices you're going to have, how frequently that data is going to be being sent. But factors like geography too also come into play, right? You may want to look into what are my regional concerns in terms of hosting a cloud in North America versus Europe and things like that.
Right. Yep. And I think you make an important point with the ecosystem slide and the conversation around that as well, where, in my research for IoT, it's this massive mix of industry expertise, embedded programming, networking, enterprise, and cloud software. And there's just – there's no real good profile of a single company that encompasses that. So, you know, leveraging ecosystem parties, I think, is probably pretty important, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really important. And what we see, what I've seen a lot is this emerging concept, I think, where people are also looking at it as it's not just having one connection for IoT, right? There may be a kind of a control plane connection, for lack of a better term, and then a data plane, right? Whereas
right.
If part of what you're doing is you want to stream a lot of large data off of a device, then you may not want to mix that in the same channel as you're trying to do the control side of it, right? And you can then sort of have different and different vendors or different types of setups to manage those things specifically, and often they'd be under completely, you know, they're different business models, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're a company that wants to send large amounts of data at high speeds, then you're probably going to have to pay something over in addition to a company that wants to pull a health message off a device, you know, once an hour type of thing.
Right.
As you can imagine, the costs of the provider for that are very different depending on those two scenarios.
Exactly. Yeah, there's a good question about Helix Device Cloud and the sensors. You mentioned the architecture of, you know, the cloud environment and the agent. Do these agents have to be running on VxWorks platforms, or will any devices, are the APIs kind of OS agnostic?
The APIs are really, they are OS agnostic. So do you mean the REST APIs on the cloud, or?
Yeah, you can connect non-VxWorks devices to the device cloud, right?
Of course. Yeah,
okay.
So the part that's OS specific in the Helix Device Cloud is essentially the agent.
Right.
So portability of the agent is an important thing. It's today we support, of course, Wind River Linux, but generally in Linux as a general rule, we have support for that's coming out for VxWorks. And Windows as well, but we're looking ahead to different types of operating systems, both large and small. But really, we started with Linux, and Linux is still very much where we see the bulk of our interest. But of course, with VxWorks, there's a significant user base there that's now maybe more lately adopting this concept of really wanting to leverage IoT.
Okay, so the agent framework itself has APIs, and you can build and run.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that should be noted potentially, though, is that the agent may have different capabilities depending on the services provided by the operating system.
Sure.
Right. So if you have the ability to, like with Linux, to install new applications easily, then that's a service the agent can provide. If you're running something smaller like a microcontroller where you have to sort of, you know, this concept of application user space and kernel space doesn't exist, then there's different solutions that you have to use and different capabilities that may be available.
Okay, great. And one final quick question, maybe in 10 seconds here. We are speaking about updating many devices at once, so the device cloud has the ability to do that, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, essentially, it will. The way it works is that it actually sends out commands to, let's take a simple example and say you're going to update 50 devices at once. It'll send out essentially a communication to each of those devices simultaneously, and they'll then attempt to connect back in the cloud and download the update, essentially.
Got it. Okay, great.
So,
thanks.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we've reached to the end. I'm sure we can follow up with the Wind River on a lot of these other questions. I want to thank Graham for sharing his insights on IoT device management, and we at Open Systems Media Wind River want to thank you, the audience, for attending today. Excellent questions. This eCast will be posted online at the URL shown on your screen in 24 hours, and an audio-only podcast version will also be made available there. You can do a web search with the keywords embedded space e-cast and find all of Open Systems Media eCast available for download there as MP3s. Thanks for attending, and have a great day.